with us. I invite the congregation now to say the words on the screen in welcome to our new members. In the bonds
of fellowship and love,
ladies and gentlemen, new members of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Fullerton.
May is canned fruit month. Sounds good. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations to provide food for those in need. We invite the children to sit up front for the time of all ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
Everyone, for those of you who do not know me or my face, I'm Rachel White. I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UUCF. And today I'm going to share a story with you entitled Golden Domes and Silver Lanterns, a Muslim Book of Colors. Red is the rug Dad kneels on to pray, facing toward Mecca 5 times a day. Blue is the hijab Mom likes to wear. It's a scarf she uses to cover her hair. Gold is the dome of the mosque, big and grand. Beside it, towering minarets stand. White is a kufi, round and flat. Grandpa wears this traditional hat. Black is the ink I use to draw the Arabic letters that spell Allah. Brown is a date, plump and sweet. During Ramadan, it's my favorite treat. Orange is the color of my henna designs. They cover my hands and leafy vines. Purple is an Eid gift just for me. I open it up and love what I see. Yellow is the box we fill on Eid with gifts of zakat for those in need. Green is the Quran I read with pride. Grandma explains the lessons inside. Silver is a fanus, a twinkling light, a shiny lantern that glows at night. All of the colorful things we've seen make up the world of my faith, my deen.
Before we begin our time of community sharing, I wanted to say a few words about some of the events that we've seen in the news this week regarding women's rights. And I thought long and hard about what and how to say it. And as imperfect as words tend to be in situations of high anxiety and concern, I still went with words, because this is what I do. And knowing it doesn't tell the whole story, it is my attempt to offer what I felt needed to be offered this morning. No need to make a woman say it again today. To give voice to the anger, rage, fear I've heard addressed all week. Only thing I haven't heard is surprise. No need to make a woman say it again today, so I will. As a man, as an ally, as an accomplice, as part of the problem, as part of the solution. No need to make a woman say it again today. When reproductive rights are taken from women, the marginalized are hurt the most. The privileged, the well-off, still have choices. But the black woman in a rural town in a southern state will suffer. The teen girl from an abusive home will suffer. The middle-aged woman already working 3 jobs with 4 kids will suffer. No need to make a woman say it again today. Make no mistake, these kinds of laws are not designed to fix an ethical problem. They do not offer conclusive clarity to areas of moral ambiguity or protections for the innocent. These kinds of laws are attacks. Attacks on women who are already without power. Attacks for political gain, to curry favor, to control. There are discussions to be had about when life begins, how to care for life, how to value life. But they are not discussions for men in suits, in political institutions, and on golf courses. They are discussions for women to lead on their own turf, on their own time, in their own way. And men can listen and support and mostly shut up. No need to make a woman say it again today. I'll say it instead. And then I can shut up until I'm called upon to speak in support. Meantime, I can shut up and sit down, as so many men need to do. Shut up and sit down so women can do the work they feel called to do, to ensure that everything that has been hitherto fought for is not lost. No need to make a woman say it again today. No need to make a woman say anything. No need. Women can speak for themselves. Our community consists of the great moments in each other's lives. The things that lift us up, that help us to ride on the waves of anticipation and joy and wholeness, and also the things that sometimes threaten to break our spirit and pull us down. If you do have a brief personal joy or sorrow that you would like to share this morning, I invite you to come forward at this time.
My neighbor Bruce, I would like to light a candle for my mother who slipped and fell and broke her femur bone a couple weeks ago, and we were all hoping she would recover. cover. Thank you.
I have several blessings. One is my dear friend Joseline became a member. And she was up there in yellow. Wave to us, Joseline. My other blessing is Jerry, who many of you know, my husband, celebrated his 80th birthday this last week. Unfortunately, I couldn't get him to come this morning, but as you know, he loves to come to our social events. And as you also know, we almost lost him in January, so I'm doubly blessed to have been able to celebrate his 80th with him. And if you'll forgive me, my last blessing is a little bit of an advertisement. I've really enjoyed organizing Foreign Foods Friday for us, and my husband and I get a chance to go test out these wonderful restaurants, these exotic foods, and present them to you once a month. And our next one is going to be actually next Friday. We're having Filipino, we're going to Filipino restaurant, and I'll be out there in the back at the booth if you'd like to join us next Friday for Foreign Foods Friday. Thank you.
My name is Fred Kushner, and for 3 years I didn't drive. I was a constant companion of OC Transit. Yesterday I looked at a car for $800. I said, how am I going to swing this? Then I went to the Ford dealership and I bought a car with my credit. I now have a car. I will be able to go to many places and hopefully do many good things.
Hi, I'm Lois Nettleship, and I'd like to thank the community for your generosity with the Share the Plate, whenever that was, a month or two ago. We raised $500+, and with additions to that now, we are supporting two scholarships. One student's going to UC Davis, and the other one's going to UC Irvine. So thank you so much. And thank you to the Social Action Committee as well.
Hello. After Jason's inspiring talk about the unfortunate legislation in our country this week, I've decided to get busy, and with Indivisible, I've helped to organize a rally on Stop the Ban Day on Tuesday, the 21st. It will be at 5 o'clock at the corner of State College and Imperial, right by the Brea Mall. So I would like to invite everybody to come. Wear pink if you can, and bring your signs. Thanks.
As always, we know there is so much more that remains unspoken going on in the lives and the hearts of the people in this room. And I encourage you to keep that in mind with every interaction that you have with people, not just in this congregation, but out in the larger world. I invite you into a time of prayer, meditation, and reflection. In this, the holy month of Ramadan, we consider the wisdom of Islam. Sometimes we, people with our liberal values, struggle with the concept of authority. It's right to question, to challenge. And yet, the word Islam means submission to God. Submission requires intentionality and the belief that what one submits to is worthy. Let us consider for a moment in our hearts the five pillars of Islam, the five obligations that every Muslim is invited to submit to. in this sanctuary, we might interpret those pillars differently than some Muslims would. We might not pray 5 times a day facing Mecca. But when we think of those pillars as this, professing, praying, giving, sacrificing, and communing. Indeed, we can take time to profess our faith. And that happens every time we are there for someone whose worth and dignity is being challenged. We pray when we take a moment in our lives to be grateful, to acknowledge the riches and fruits of what is, and to name our hopes for what will be. We give when we help others. We may not engage, all of us anyway, in ritual fasting, but taking a break from the norms of our lives can give us room to grow. And while we may not pilgrimage to Mecca, we can travel to sacred spaces like this sanctuary where we can be reminded of our deepest values. Like it or not, our lives are characterized by submission, submitting to powers we often can't control. And we too can profess, pray, give, sacrifice, and commune as part of our lives. In our moment of silence, I invite you to consider these pillars and how they might touch your life. This morning, we consider the places of intersection in our lives of those with Muslim identity. And part of why we do this work is that in understanding one another, we move toward peace. In the words of the Quran, praise be to the universe that has created us and made us into tribes and nations that we may know each other, not that we may despise each other. If the enemy inclined towards peace, do thou also incline towards peace. And trust in God, who heareth and knoweth all things. And those who are most gracious are those who walk on the earth in humility. And when we address them, we say, peace. I don't have a sermon for you this morning.
Well, I almost don't.
I don't have the sermon that I advertised. I don't have the sermon you probably expected. I don't have the sermon I expected. I guess what I have this morning is something else. Love story of sorts, maybe, or multiple love stories that overlap. But I don't have what I thought I'd have. Over this past church year, we have engaged in a series of services called Voices in Unitarian Universalism. We've explored Buddhist, Christian, humanist, Jewish, pagan, and Hindu voices. And all of these services, except the Hindu one, have been primarily sourced from the Voices in Unitarian Universalism series from Skinner House Books. It's one of our UU presses. There is no Hindu Voices book as of yet, but that was an easy enough service to still put together because of Unitarianism's long association with India. And now it's time for Islamic Voices. And there's no book. And in an era where there is rampant fear of and bigotry toward those who identify as Muslim, the written research on those who identify as both UU and Muslim reveals crickets. And so I struggled this week to pull this together. And as I did, I realized that my story intersected with the story of why there is this great hole in our understanding of UU Muslim voices. And so in lieu of the sermon we would have had this morning had the Muslim Voices in Unitarian Universalism book existed, I'll tell you my story instead, which in the end isn't really just my story at all. So 4 years ago, right around this time, May, an idea was hatched. The plan proposed to me was that I would become assistant minister for a year to one of our largest UU congregations located up in Northern California. I'd fly up north every other week, doing office duty and pastoral care, facilitating small groups, running workshops or classes, and preaching on Sundays. I would fly home on Sunday night while doing assignments for the second master's degree that I had unwittingly decided to pick up. This idea hatched in a period of hope and promise and seemingly endless possibility turned out to be one of the worst ideas of my life. For reasons I can't share with you, it was a disastrous year for my spirit. I can, to outward appearances, operate pretty successfully in even terrible situations, which is not always a gift. Because the problem with being able to carry on in an abusive situation is that sometimes you carry on far past your limits. And by the time I spoke with the search team for UUCF that February, those good people tasked with finding a minister to help lead this congregation on the next step of its journey, I didn't quite realize how close to the point of breaking I was, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. My experience during that time made it harder and harder to find those spaces of hope and possibility so fundamental to my being. But there were, as there so often is, a few saving graces during that time. And this is where this becomes a love story of sorts, a little bit. One of those saving graces had a name, Renoir Hamamy. Now she's the Reverend Renoir Hamamy, and you might remember her from the brief visit she made to my installation a couple of years ago. We have a photo there somewhere, right? Coming up. She's currently the executive director of UU Justice Ministries of California. But during this year I talk about, Renwall was the intern minister for the same congregation I was serving as assistant minister for. And she was also mercifully my friend. Now, Renwall wasn't my first experience with someone who identified as both Muslim and UU. You all had the chance last year to know Reverend Summer Albayati, who I first met many years ago at the Orange Coast UU Church over in Costa Mesa. Reverend Summer is the daughter of the late legendary Iraqi musician Sadun Albayati. From the age of 12 on, Summer played the Sufi Islamic rhythms of her father's homeland in professional concerts with him, with people like Joan Baez and so on. And it was through playing the Arabic drum for thousands of people over those years that she began to internalize what she calls an Islamic aesthetic and unity with the beloved. Today, defining herself as a mystic inspired by that Sufi tradition, Reverend Summer brings those Islamic gifts to her ministry and to the Unitarian Universalist movement. And I'm grateful she was able to be with us in a very part-time way last year. And she sends her love to all of you this morning, knowing what our topic is. So Renwall Hamamy was not the first UU Muslim I knew. But I had a bit of a unique experience being so close through circumstance to two people who identify as such when that identity has been something not exactly visible in our larger UU movement. A few years ago, Renoir keenly felt this lack of visibility. As the preface to the still unpublished book, Muslim Voices in Unitarian Universalism says, and I'll explain as we go along why it's still unpublished. But she says, Renoir had yet to see a place for her particular double belonging identity as a UU Muslim. Where were the stories by Muslims in Unitarian Universalist settings? Where were the stories written by people whose hearts called them to both spaces, whose faith wasn't bound to the either or, but liberated by the both and? So much had been written about Islam as an other faith, but what about the voices of people who actually lived it in Unitarian Universalist settings? Then one summer, Renoir picked up a book, Jewish Voices in Unitarian Universalism, and discovering it was part of a series, she began to wonder, why can't we do that? Could this be the space for our stories to come together, to finally be heard as a chorus? Would it create the visibility needed for new narratives within the Unitarian Universalist and Islamic traditions? Would bringing together our diverse voices help to transform both faiths, to be a liberative force for both faiths? And so when I met Renoir and began working with her in such difficult circumstances, this book proposal had just been accepted. And she would be co-editor with Dr. Ibrahim Farajaje, Dean of Faculty at Star King Seminary. Now that's the UU seminary located up in Berkeley. And like Renoir, Ibrahim questioned the visibility of Muslims in our UU communities. And he was a leader in making sure that that UU seminary, Star King, would now be dedicating a portion of their resources, human, intellectual, and spiritual, to sheltering the Islamic traditions in a time of virulent Islamophobia. And it was not so simple. Perhaps the most beautiful feature of Unitarian Universalism, they write, is its potential to serve as a spiritual home for people of different backgrounds and experiences. Unfortunately, not every Unitarian Universalist felt comfortable with the idea of opening a traditionally UU seminary to Muslim-identified people. Some even felt it was highly inappropriate and said it disrespected their Unitarian Universalist heritage and history. This complexity of reactions made Ibrahim dream of a book such as this, witnessing the stories, hopes, sadness, joys, and journeys of people living in UU and Muslim worlds. and remember those days when Renwa would talk of the book she and Ibrahim were working on. Samar al-Bayadi would be a contributor, along with others. It was a labor of love, the deepest kind of love. Love built on cultivating understanding and empathy. Love that believed in the power of possibility. In a year in which I needed every ounce of possibility I could find, I too clung to the idea of the publication of this book. As Renwa and I created worship services, classes, and workshops together, I would witness her core theology in action, evidenced in her patient and loving support of me during my difficult journey, and I'd also see her wrestle with the Islamophobia she encountered, sometimes from well-meaning but unaware people right there in the congregation. And through it all, though our backgrounds were so different and though Islam initially seemed so foreign to me, I realized that Renwa and I had so much in common in the way we made meaning of the world. And for us, it came back once again to that word, possibility. To believe in what is possible. To make space for what is possible. To recognize that so much of transforming the world is difficult but still possible through love. We relied so much on the word possibility in our reflections and our sermons that we made a bet to see who would be the first to break and use the word possibility again first. And I'm not sure which one of us lost that bet. All I remember is that it was lost quickly. I probably owe her some money or something. But the lure of possibility was too great for either of us to stay away from. And why should she? Should we? But the other side of possibility is that sometimes the unthinkable happens. Dr. Ibrahim Farajaje, Renwa's co-editor and friend and mentor and prophet of possibility, suffered a cardiac arrest during that time and died a month later. And so this book, this labor of love already years in the making, this book that is so sorely needed by our community to offer healing and understanding in a time of deep anti-Islamic feelings, this book was yet again put on hold as grief rippled through its community of authors. In the meantime, however, work continued to be done to explore the role of Muslims in our UU community. Renwa writes, "It is no accident that Muslims find their way to Unitarian Universalism. With principles that echo many core values of Islamic teachings and willingness to sit with difference, often side by side in the pew, Unitarian Universalism has the potential to offer Muslims meaningful spiritual community. This can be especially needed by those who feel unwelcome or uncomfortable in local traditional Muslim spaces, those who identify as LGBTQ+, have interfaith families, or belong to minority Muslim sects. UU congregations, for their part, often respond to the increased visibility of Muslims and Islamic traditions with an earnest desire to be welcoming and a hallmark curiosity about unfamiliar beliefs and practices. Now, in the past, this attention to Islam and Muslims has taken the form of striving to be good neighbors to the Muslim community, engaging in interfaith work with local mosques, and inclusion of Islamic principles and holidays in religious education, and sometimes in sermons. Now, many Unitarian Universalist congregations are familiar with the basics, the five pillars of Islam, the fast of Ramadan, the existence of Sunni and Shia sects, the mystical nature of Sufism, and the poetry of its most famous adherent, Rumi. Yet there remains a disconnect between this outward-facing openness to the Islamic traditions beyond the UU doors and the inward-facing attention to Muslims in Unitarian Universalism." So what she's saying is, We're pretty good at supporting Muslim communities when we see them under attack from either ignorance or violent actions, but we're not so good at lifting up the Islamic voices that are already here among us. And we have them right in this room. I don't know if you know that. No, some of you know that because you are those people, but we have them right here. We still have a tendency to see Muslims as the other, something exotic and different, rather than recognize the presence of those among us. I think this loving recognition is our work right now in this, the holy month of Ramadan, this time of fasting, a practice designed to open up space. Sometimes we have to create space so that we can welcome in possibility. So what space can we open up? Through love, what possibilities can we create? I had to contact Renoir this week to see if she'd be willing to share some of what was in progress on this someday to be published book, and surprise, you guys are the very first people in the entire country to hear some of what's in that book. I knew my request would bring up a lot for her, but what I was surprised about was how much it brought up for me. About that difficult year from which I will admit I am still healing, about my admiration for and friendship with Renoir, and about the realities of living in a world where religious prejudice is still so strong and even touches our own progressive liberal communities. I've told you my story this morning, not because it's particularly important, but because it illustrates that this thing I would have thought I didn't really have anything to do with, Muslim voices in Unitarian Universalism, it's also part of my story, this love story of sorts. And it's also part of your story too. At the very least, it's part of yours because I'm here with you. I survived that terrible year thanks to the encouragement of people like Renoir, who enabled me to say yes to your call to come here to UUCF. Renoir, who offered that support because she could draw from a place of love that was rooted in her identity as a UU Muslim. And it's also part of your story because, as I said before, there are people in this room who have connections to Islam. And it's part of our story because we are all part of each other's stories, all part of the larger human race, all part of the process of creating space for possibility. I'll leave you with Renoir's words, words that will introduce this book that is yet to be. She writes, "No person has just one identity. Beyond having their own particular relationships to both the Islamic and Unitarian Universalist traditions, every writer in this collection views the world through multiple lenses, whether it is their race, ethnicity, gender identity, sexual orientation, age, disability, economic background, or countless other features of their personhood. Each contributor is more than a single story or a monolithic label. We hope that the multifaceted and ever-expanding nature of their humanity serves as a reminder of the various narratives within the Islamic traditions and within our Unitarian Universalist faith traditions and communities. We hope that you open your hearts and minds to the ways in which the purposeful differences you encounter will challenge you to grow. Just as there is not a monolithic Islam, there is no monolithic way of being a Unitarian Universalist or a UU Muslim. This book introduces us to some of the journeys of many who join us on this path, a path that encourages respect, compassion, curiosity, while striving to make our world and Unitarian Universalism a just, liberated, loving, and joyful home for all who live in it. And I will add, in the name of all that is possible, in the words of Rumi, may our hearts truly say, come, come, whoever you are, and may we welcome in all the love stories that touch our lives in all their glorious diversity.
And in that spirit of possibilities, our our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that the community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity.
Whatever will be, will be. Islam invites us to give ourselves over sometimes to something greater than ourselves. We are still called to take action, to make the world a better place. There is also something to recognizing that we are part of something larger and leaning into that a little bit, making space for all that possibility. So in that spirit, I invite you to rise in body or spirit to sing our closing hymn, Let It Be.
Let it be. Let it be. Let
this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Would you please join hands for our closing words? I went looking for a story, someone else's story, and I found out it hadn't been written yet, and that it was my story too. May you too discover what stories need to be written, and may you be sure that they are stories of love. Until we are together again, amen, shalom, salam, namaste, and blessed be. Go now in peace.